So welcome to In the Name of Passion. I'm so excited that I'm dropping things on the floor. For those of you who have been traveling on this journey of actualizing the Iron Pentacle, welcome back. I'm glad that you're sticking it out. And for folks just getting on this train for this part of the journey or the rest of it, welcome. Where do I want to begin? Let's begin with making a connection, getting fully present, grounded, centered in the body, centered in this particular time and space and with this group of people. So we'll do that by beginning with some slow, deep breathing. And you can just close your eyes if that's comfortable for you. And so really slow your breathing down. Become fully conscious of it, of the breath coming in and out. And consciously choose to fill your lungs beyond those upper lobes. We tend to breathe very lightly in the upper part of our chest. So bring the breath down to completely fill your lungs. And the tendency here is to breathe fast if we're doing that, but it actually works better if you just go nice and slow. And breathe deep enough that you feel, if you put your arms against your body, that you feel your chest expanding against the sides of your arms. And you may want to pull your shoulders back and down, just slightly opening your chest. Feeling your posture change and your attention change with just that very minor postural adjustment. And give some attention to the seat that you're sitting in. Notice how it is supporting you. And not just think about how it's supporting you, but allow yourself to feel the support of the seat. Feel it pressing against your body. Feel your body pressing against it. And let yourself relax into that support. And drop the attention down to the chair itself and how the chair is being supported by the floor. And feel that sense of the floor supporting the chair, supporting your body, your weight. And so you can let yourself relax a little further. And then how the floor is supported by the building, by the structures and beams and how the building is supported by its foundation. And how that foundation is sunk into the earth. And so feel the reality of the earth supporting your body. And let yourself relax into that. And just make a conscious effort, even if all you can do is imagine it. Imagine a circle, a container around those of us who are doing this work together tonight, right? So it's kind of a virtual container. But reach out to the others who are present. And if you're having a hard time with that, you can just reach out to my energy and I'll do the rest. Oh, hi. So the container for this work is one of safety, mutual respect, intimacy, and vulnerability, and power. So safety does not mean that you won't hear anything here, that might disturb you, okay? But safety means that this is a safe place to, even if you are feeling uncomfortable, that you can, this is a safe place to sit in that discomfort, okay? It's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay to disagree, okay? So, good, good. Oh, good, more people came. Awesome. Hi, Brendan. Hi, Carrie. So, in the name of passion is the third segment in a series of five classes. And the five classes are all focused and woven together in the work of the Iron Pentacle. So if you're not familiar at all with Iron Pentacle work, that you there may be some holes here. And if so, I'd like you to ask me either here or in the forum to try to help you fill in the blanks. So very, very quickly, the Iron Pentacle is a tool of the fairy tradition. Victor Anderson, I believe, received this tool as part of his work with the Harpy Coven, which was in Ashland, Oregon, around the 1930s, 1940s. It is... It's a powerful tool. It is a tool for self-development and self-awareness, for diagnosis of our complexes, and empowerment of the self as witch. The other half of this work is the Pearl Pentacle. Everybody here, everybody who's in the room right now is studying fairy with me at some level or another. So the other half of this work is the Pearl Pentacle. And different teachers teach iron and purl different ways. The way I was taught was I was really only taught iron pentacle. My teacher said when iron pentacle is correct, when it is running clean, clear, brightly, without leaks or holes or blocks or complexes or obfuscations, that what happens is that it becomes the pearl of its own accord. And the pearl is our relationship with other people, okay? So there's a bit of spikiness that happens when we, that can happen, okay? I don't want to implant a negative expectation, right? So there's this intense focus on self and on ourselves and self-development can create a kind of spikiness around other people, communities, relationships, workplace stuff. And there are remedies for that. If you're having that kind of problem, please let me know and I will give you a remedy to help you to smooth out those spiky edges a little bit. Part of it is just coming into our own power, into taking up our own space unapologetically. And that can be hard for people around us who know us as people who maybe bow down or try to stay out of the way or don't speak up or never complain or never have an opinion, right? So what happens when Iron Pentacle becomes clear is that then we are in a position that we have a clear and clean isn't really the right word, relationship with ourselves, a healthy relationship with self, that our relationship with others, with community, with our partners, with our bosses, with our all of that sort of comes into alignment with our iron. So iron becomes pearl. So we're working on passion, which is the third point if we are moving around the iron pentacle. So we start with sex at the, this is the sex point is your head, self point is your left hand, passion is your left foot, pride is your right foot, power is your right hand. There is this, remember when we're talking about a pentacle rather than a pentagram, a pentacle is just the five-pointed star. Pentagram is the five-pointed star. A pentacle has a circle around it, right? So it's contained. That power is contained. So we run the energy in this class around the points. We start with sex, imagining, visualizing a red fire, or beyond the red part of a flame, of an actual flame, it then is sort of orangey, yellowy, and then white, right? So those are that's the part of the flame we want to be visualizing. The farther you go down to the wick, that red becomes white, and then it becomes greenish, bluish, right? So the blue flame is always the flame. This is like science. This is observable, right? This is not just like, you know, magic visualization. The blue flame is the flame that is burning the fuel, okay? If you turn on a gas stove, the flame is blue because it's being fed by gas, right? If you look at the base of a candle when you light it, the flame that's closest to the wick is blue. So we don't use blue fire. I don't care what other people are doing, what other teachers are teaching. We don't use blue fire because blue fire, we are the fuel for the fire that we're running. Okay, so this is how we keep ourselves a little safer, a little less jangly, and from hurting ourselves. So the focus is passion. And just like the other points, sex and self and pride and power, it is a charged word, right? What does passion mean, right? What are some of the things that we've been told about passion? What are some of the romantic and alluring things about passion? And what are some of the warnings that come with the word passion? I think what I'd like to do is actually get some answers to those questions from you guys. So that will give us a really good jumping off place. And I think I'd like to start with, I don't know, I think I always start with Dawn. Don't I always start with you, Dawn? let's see if we can get you unmuted here.
Okay, am I here?
You're here.
Okay. I know you just said it. Repeat the question for me.
So the question is, you know, what are some of those things that we, that passion means? What are some of the ways that passion, it is some, is a concept that's alluring and attractive to us? And what are some of the ways that we have been warned about passion? Can you think of any?
Yeah, so I'll go with the second part first. We're warned that passion will take us too far, will prompt us to make bad choices. Phrases like in the heat of passion, crime of passion. So passion is uncontrollable. Too much. Passion is too much. So back to the first part of that, passion is also consuming. Well, this is two parts. This is like the bridge. Passion is consuming. That it's something that takes over your whole being, sometimes in a good way, but when it goes too far, becomes a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
Passion can also be a life purpose. This is my passion. Following your passion, following your heart, following your bliss. Passion can also be related back to sex and all forms of sex, but you know that exchange that can be described as passionate.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who feels strongly is passionate about something. There's also, and I never really understood it, which is why I'm going to do some wired web weaving around it, but the phrase passion play, I'm from the South. So, you know, the passion of Christ, that
yeah.
kind of thing. And when I was younger, when I was a little kid, I never understood that.
I still don't understand.
as I got an adult, it wasn't really I came to understand that passion wasn't necessarily that feeling good. There's this the passion was a giving over of everything you have. That's how I came to understand that phrase. As an adult. So I think I just sort of spilled out everything that came to my mind.
Good. That's awesome. Thank you, Dawn.
Sure.
And I'm going to ask. Oh. Here we go. Carrie, hi.
Hi. Wow, that's a hard act to follow. Kind of hit a lot there. I was thinking of you know, the negative aspects first, or what we've been taught to believe the negative aspects are,
mm-hmm.
That to be passionate implies in some way, somehow, to be unbalanced. I was thinking of that word, I was thinking of that expression, crime of passion.
Mm-hmm.
The implication that it's too hot, you're too hot, that it's almost like a compulsion or an obsession.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the negative things I can think. And then, you know, I guess for the positive things, I was thinking, when I think of passion, I think of ecstasy. I think of, you know, an ecstatic reaction, whether it's, you know, in the personal sense or in communion with God or any, you know, in any other way.
Uh-huh.
I can think of, yeah. I think of it as an ecstatic relationship.
Beautiful. Thank you, Carrie. I'm so glad you're here. So, someone mentioned word web weaving, and probably everybody here has worked with me long enough to know what that means, but so I'm not going to get into a whole long description. I will give the description and directions for word web weaving on the forum tomorrow. Usually these classes post to the forum sometime within the next 24 to 30 hours. So the recording will be there. Notes from the class will be there. Assignments will be there. And instructions for word web weaving will be there. And I hope that you do a lot of word web weaving around what comes up in this class. So I'm just going to read you sort of some snippets and notes here and passion is neither pathological nor irresponsible. So the correct flow of passion, right, allows us to face our false fears and ignite within us a fire which incinerates our toxic shame and guilt. Passion cleanses us both physically and metaphysically. Okay. So the fire of passion burns away our toxic shame and guilt. That's a big statement, right? So what we want to do here is try to unhook our definitions, okay? Faerie is a tradition of selfhood, right? We want to be able to build webs and bridges between the words that we use so our language sustains us and our magic. So passion is a motivating force. It motivates us, it impels or compels us to begin, to create, to make art, to make the phone call, to arrive at the dance lesson, to show up at the altar for practice, to show up at the page to write or the canvas to paint or the gym to work out or the library to research, to show up in the sheets to make love, right? Passion awakens and invigorates and arouses. It is the impulse preceding any movement, right? Passion is the impulse preceding any forward movement, right? So without passion, we can't get from self to pride when running through the points. Without passion, running around the edge of the iron pentacle, without passion, we can't get from power to sex, right? The line goes power, passion, sex, okay, when running energy through the points of the pentacle. So that impulse, I want us to pay attention and look for, like, set an internal alarm for when you feel the impulse to do something, right? There's almost, like, I wish you could see my whole body, but there's almost low in the belly, right? There is a pull forward, right? Like when you're going to get up out of a chair, right? You put your feet on the floor, and really, we lead with our torso, right? And passion feels like that, sort of lifting and moving toward, right? So I want us to spend some time this first week asking our wild soul, asking our fetch to alert us to how does passion, that motivating force, that impulse toward something, right, feel in the body, okay? This is the piece we're wanting to get at, is what does passion actually feel like, okay? Victor Anderson said, passion without precision is chaos, right? And I could go on and on about this little Victor Anderson koan, but I want you to wrestle with that yourself, right? What does that mean, passion without precision, right? Contemplating that koan, right, that fairy-ism, has taught me volumes about passion, but also about the precision of a poem, of spells, of words, of desire and will. And it has also been there to remind me when chaos ensues, that it's best not to exert energy attempting to manage chaos, right? Chaos arises when there is no precision. So I want you to wrestle with that sentence and embrace it and sleep with it under your pillow and write it somewhere where you can see it so that it's sort of like in your face. Like, what on earth does passion have to do with precision? If passion has to do with being out of control, too much, giving over everything, unbalanced, too hot, compulsion, obsession, all-consuming, heat, crime. Okay? What does passion have to do with precision if that's what passion is, right? So the first word that we should be looking up in our word web weaving is passion, is the word passion. Like, what does Merriam-Webster have to say about that? Where is my thing? There it is. So I have like 100 tabs open with notes and stuff. I can shut that one down because no one is looking for me on Facebook right now that I care about. So everyone who is present, let me just, before I say this, I have to keep checking to see if more people have arrived. What is even happening? There it is. Okay. So everyone who's present has the practices of soul alignment and Kala, right? So I don't have to spend time teaching that or teaching you about the threefold spirit before I can teach you about Ha and Kala. So that's good. Not that I ever mind teaching that to people, but that's a big chunk, right? Where did my thing go? I'm sorry, all of my stuff is gone crazy here. There we go. Too much. Maybe that. Okay. So, from here on, it should go without saying that all of the work that's assigned within the context of this class should begin with soul alignment and Kala, okay? It doesn't matter if you've already aligned and made Kala earlier in the day. Do it again before approaching this work, okay? This way, all three soul parts can take their rightful role in the work, and any complexes or blocks which might prevent you from getting the most out of the work will be handled with Kala, okay? You'll find it useful to align before opening the week's assignment. Okay, when you go to the forum, align before you go there, okay? Before you come to next week's class, align before you arrive here, okay? We can't make Ha too often, okay? We can't make Kala too often. Once daily is, in most cases, nowhere near often enough, okay? So, alignment and Kala daily whenever you're doing this work, okay? Word web weaving, you already know how to do that. Iron Pentacle is an embodied reality. So, one of the distinguishing elements of fairy tradition is that we don't deal in symbolism or metaphor very much, if at all, right? If I'm giving you a metaphor, I'll usually say this is a metaphor for the thing I'm trying to explain, right? One of the most damaging changes to the tradition that I've seen over the years as it's become more public is the idea that our tools and gods and lore are mere symbolism, are symbolic rather than real. So it's important to understand that the Iron Pentacle isn't a symbol. It's not merely a tool or an exercise or a set of exercises for self-awareness, but it's a reality that exists in our body, our blood, and in our threefold spirit. For a long time, the fairy student does fairy exercises, including Iron Pentacle work, but after a while, the pentacle begins to awaken and to take shape within the student. In time, the Iron Pentacle is no longer something we do. Rather, it's something we are. It is in us as surely as our hand is at the end of our arm. To miss the reality of this and its application within the context of the whole tradition is to miss the point. Ha, ha, ha. Pun intended. I asked a couple questions and hopefully got you guys thinking about, what do I think passion is? And the next thing I want to do is if you would get out your pen and paper, and we're going to do five questions, quick. So I'm going to do the time, and I'll let you know when you're going to run out of time. But I just want you to quickly just jot down on a piece of paper whatever is coming to mind in response to the questions that I ask, okay? If you feel like I said everything I needed to say, then just, you know, keep repeat yourself. It's okay. Nobody's going to see this piece of paper but you. And if you think you have a lot more to say about these questions, a lot more ways that you want to respond, you're going to have plenty of time to think about them and write about them over the coming weeks, okay? So the point of the exercise is to get your raw and unedited thoughts and feelings and perceptions down in print, not just because isn't that an interesting exercise, but so that you can refer to them later, right? Your answers are only for you. You won't share them here unless you want to. So don't edit out any incidences of shame or fear or guilt, and don't set yourself up as an expert. No one's listening but that within you, okay? So here are the questions, and get ready to write. I'm getting ready to figure out how to have more technology involved in this process. Hold on, new phone. Timer. So I'm going to give you 1 minute to respond, and I'll let you know when you have about 10 seconds left. So the first question is, what do you think about when you hear the word passion? Go. What do you think about when you hear the word passion? You have 10 seconds left. And stop. And next question is, what does society say about passion? What does society say about passion? Go ahead, go. Ten seconds. And that's it. Next question. What are your issues or concerns about passion? Go. What are your issues or concerns about passion? Ten seconds. Stop. Next question. What do you like about passion? What's intriguing to you about passion? Go ahead. What do you like, or what is intriguing to you about passion? Ten seconds. And stop. And then the last question is, what are your strengths as related to passion? What are your strengths around passion? Go. In 10 seconds. And put your pens down. So thank you for doing that. You now have some feedback about yourself, and one of the good things about the exercise is that it's uncensored, right? Like, you're not writing me an answer, or you're not sharing your answers with anyone if you don't want to. You're not trying to write a paper or censor yourself in any way. You're just trying to keep the flow of thoughts coming through the pen. And so what you have there is sort of the real stuff, right? So if you're looking at your answers and you're like, wow, I didn't even know that I thought that, right? I didn't even know that I felt that way, or I never recognized that strength in myself or recognized that as a strength, right? So you have some new information already about yourself and your passionate nature and your understanding of passion. So I am going to ask in a little bit if anybody wants to share anything that they found as they wrote that, but you don't have to. It will be one of those things where I unmute everybody, and if anyone has anything to say, you can speak up. So in the meantime, passion, we need passion, okay? We need it. We need passion for our God self, right? We need passion for our Godhood so that we can break into the kingdom of heaven that's within us, okay? We need to ignite the fires and open the floodgates to passion. Passion is one of those things, right? Sex, self, passion, pride, power. These are dangerous ideas, right? These are all things that we have been warned away from, right? Don't get too big. Don't be so full of yourself. Sex is dirty. Power is for bullies. Power is always power over. Who do you think you are? You're so full of yourself, filled with pride, right? So prideful, right? These are, you know, might as well be the seven deadly sins, right? And what are we doing here as witches? Going, yeah, give me that. Give me that. Give me that good stuff, right? The truth is that all of these things that we have been warned away from, the reason why they are suppressed and repressed and oppressed is to keep us in our place, is to keep us small and compliant and bored so that we buy things, right? And insecure, right? And powerless, right? So what happens to an individual when they reclaim the healthy, reclaim and make manifest, embody this healthy way of being in the world, right? This is dangerous, right? We become a danger. We become a threat to the status quo, right? And so one of the things that, you know, we've discussed a little bit in the weeks prior to this, in the classes prior to this, and then it's coming up in all kinds of classes. It always comes up whenever I teach. People say, but I'm afraid of what other people are going to think if I become more fully myself, if I allow passion to be part of what helps me make decisions in my life, if I take pride in myself, right? If I own my own power, right? And if I own and enjoy my own sexuality, right? I'm afraid, what will other people think? So, those people, you know, those people who are always nefarious, faceless, right? Or maybe there's faces, maybe it's your mom, maybe it's that girl from high school, maybe it's your ex, maybe it's your boss, maybe it's, I don't know, your minister at your childhood church. But those nefarious others are a projection of our own fear, right? What we are really saying is, what will I think of myself if I become fully empowered as a human being who is sexual, self-loving, passionate, proud of themselves, and powerful? What might I become? The projection toward others, right, is so that we don't have to own that self-judgment. Okay? It's tricksy, kind of twisty, but we do all of these games inside of ourselves, right? So what others, what real live other people think of us, if it's problematic, they'll probably say something and you'll have to have a conversation with them. That wouldn't be so horrible, right? If it's problematic to the point where people are telling you, you can't act that way, or I'm gonna, leave or withhold my love from you, or are those your people, right? We want to surround ourselves with people who are fully and completely supportive of us being fully and completely ourselves, right? Anybody else is not our people, right? Anybody who wants us to stay small in order to accommodate them is not helping us, right? So our goal here is to ignite the fire and open the floodgates to passion. It's interesting because we often describe passion as heat, right? I think Don said, you know, heat, intensity, right? And we especially think of that when we think about, when we confuse passion and sex, right? So hot, fiery, spark, inspiring, right? But passion is also watery. Passion wants to flow, right? Passion wants to overflow. So it's both liquid and fiery, like lava, right? Like molten magma or iron. It needs a container and a direction, or it can destroy what's in its path, right? Passion can be destructive, right? But like lava, passion also will create new ground, okay? New earth. It does have to destroy what's in the way, but it will create new ground for us to walk on. So containers are important, right? If passion is in the realm of emotion, of the fetch, the wild soul, then we need to trust the fetch. We need to listen. We need to pay attention. We need to follow the fetch. What is the fetch drawn to? What are the things that excite and entice and inspire the fetch? Okay. What is she trying to show us? What is she teaching us? What is he trying to engage us in? And how do we follow and learn and engage in passion, right? All the points on the Iron Pentacle can be destructive. Self, pride, power, and even sex. One of the many goals of Iron Pentacle work is recognizing the danger in these points, in these aspects of ourselves, and claiming them. Working directly with these powerful forces, we become sharp and precise, like a knife, like a scalpel, okay? Sharp and precise. When we run the power through the points, from sex to pride to self to power to passion, sex, pride, self, power, passion, we recognize how sharp and shiny and formidable the Iron Pentacle is. But when we work with these forces and characteristics in the circle, right, we have a container for this particular energy, right? Working with these points, we become densely embodied and graceful in our deadliness. Okay? Run the power around. Look at the beautiful, seamless container for power. So, IP is a tool for self-awareness, but it's the kind of self-awareness that we develop that makes ourselves into a kind of weapon. Okay, Victor Anderson talked about, often said, that fairy tradition is a martial art, okay? So we are that. We are the weapon. The witch is the altar, right? We are our tools, and we are a weapon. I'm using this language, this strong language, because I want you to be a little unnerved. I want you to write these things down. I want you to look these words up, right? So when we say that we embody the Iron Pentacle, we're not talking about putting a symbol in the body so that we can mimic its qualities. We're describing becoming the quality and the thing itself. So we talked earlier, some of the words that came up around negative ideas about passion were obsession, compulsion, consuming, which can go either way, right? Too much, uncontrollable, too far, and even criminal, right? Giving up or giving over everything in an unbalanced way. That was your word, unbalanced, right? So the unbalanced passion point, right, looks like obsession on one side, right? That's like too much passion, right? And that's when you get a crime, right? That is when we are unable to be precise with passion. So too much passion is obsession or compulsion or addiction, right? And too little passion looks like apathy, looks like inability to get anything started, right? So looks like I don't know. I'm probably showing my age, and I probably shouldn't even say this anymore because it's so untimely for these times that we're in. But back in the day, people I knew who used a lot of marijuana were apathetic. They had great ideas, but no follow through. So it's great if you can lay around on the couch and think of brilliant ideas. But without that impulse, right, to get out of your seat, without that impulse that to take action, right, without will and precision, good ideas are just good ideas. And we forget about them in the morning or we forget about them in a week. So passion also has to run. It can't just be a standalone thing. It's connected to self. It's connected to pride on the other side, if we're going around the pentacle. But it's connected to power, right? Power feeds passion. Passion feeds sex. And the sex point, as we know, is not just about sex. It's not about genitals. It is about genitals. Of course it is, right? But it's also about creation. It's about manifestation. It's about will in action. So power feeds pride. I mean, pride, power feeds passion, right? And that impulse comes up to sex for will and action, okay? With will and action completed, pride, okay? Pride, healthy pride, pride that's fed by completion of will and action, feeds the self point. And a healthy self, powerful. Okay? Get it? So we can't really talk about these middle points as though they are isolated, right? Everything is feeding everything else in the iron pentacle. So even if these points can be destructive, we are trying to clear and make kala and move away the detritus of negative habit, negative belief, all the complexes around shame and fear and guilt in the fetch, right? So that passion can be clean and clear and strong enough to get us off the couch and do something, right? But without tipping over that knife edge into obsession, right? So if we're apathetic, we are afraid that passion will make us obsessive or compulsive, right? If we're compulsive and obsessive, we're afraid of healthy passion because we're kind of afraid it will make us apathetic, right? There's that thin line, right? That edge that we walk on this path. So when we say we embody the Iron Pentacle, we are talking about not putting a symbol, not like imagining a symbol and placing it in the body, right? We are talking about actually running energy through an etheric reality, okay? The etheric reality of the Iron Pentacle is in all of us, right? It's up, but activating it is another thing. So we're right at 9 o'clock. Generally, we're running until 9:15, 9:30, but we do have a few more people in class tonight than we had last time. So what I'd like to do is just take a five-minute quick bio break, get some water, run around, go to the bathroom, do whatever you need to do. Now it's 9:01, so at 5 minutes past the hour, let's just come right back, okay? Quick. Just one more minute, we're coming back. Thank you. Okay. So take out your pen again. And on your page, just number 1 through 10 down the line, like 1, 2, 3, like in a column. And very, very short answers, okay? I'm going to give you just a couple minutes to do this. It shouldn't take you too long. So answer 10 things, okay? I want you to complete the sentence 10 times, okay? If I listened to my passion, I would 10 things. I'm going to do it too. Okay, so this week between classes, I want you to think about we get that impulse, right? So one of the things that I am passionate about, right, is reading, right? Like reading books. I have, I don't know, dozen books at least right now that are like on the shelf of books I want to read on my bookshelf. And then there are 3 more books on my nightstand, right? Books I want to read, books I want to read them. Don't have them there because they're assigned or I'm supposed to read them or I should read them. I spent money on these books because I want to read them, and yet I'm not reading them, right? So there's always something else, right? So what is that? What happens when we have that impulse and then we sit back down, right? What is going on there? I want you to have a dialogue with yourself, right? Because that part of you that is leaning in, that is moving toward, that's your fetch. The passion is the venue. Venue is the wrong word. But passion is it belongs to the fetch. That's fetch, right? It is, Talker is suspicious of passion. Talker says, I have more important things to do than sit down and read a book, right? I have more important things to do than write the book, right? I have more important things to do than listen to more music, right? Talker is suspicious of passion. And look at the dictionary. The dictionary will give you ample evidence of how suspicious the talker is of passion, right? Passion is the opposite of reason, okay? talker is all about reason and logistics and lists and logic, okay? But passion says, right now I got to go do this thing. Right now, right? This is the thing. Nothing will stop me. Okay? So passion, I have talked about it as an impulse, but it's a motivator. It is the thing that motivates, right? So when we are pulled to motivation, what is it that makes us say, nah, or I can't, or I forgot I even wanted to do that, right? Will is the follow through, right? So passion ignites, it inspires, it is an impulse, right? And yet we need to follow through, we need to take an action. To be passionate about something and not follow through, then we need to ask, you know, look at your list and ask yourself, am I really passionate about that? Like, what is in the way of my following my passion, right? Okay, so what I like to do at this point is ask for your input, your questions, your comments, your concerns, your ideas, what's coming up for you as a result of all the things I just said to you for an hour, as a result of the questions that you've asked yourself. So, what I'm going to do, and this is a new trick, is I unmute everybody and then ask for the person who, anybody who's ready to speak, can just say your name, okay? And then what I will do is I will mute everyone again and you can unmute yourself, okay? Ready?
Stephanie, I'm here.
Great. Hold on a second, Stephanie. Go ahead and unmute yourself, honey. There you go.
When at the very beginning, I was just taking notes for myself about what is passion. I was thinking, oh, passion, this is an easy one. This is all, you know, fine and easy enough. But as was talked about, the danger and compulsion that was brought up as what we think about passion or what it can seem like, how it's, you know, and so forth. One thing I wrote down was manic. Which is pretty important. And so this is gonna be a big class. That's all I got.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thanks for that vulnerability. Mania is when passion is on that other edge, right? And so it's safer, right, to sort of like get that impulse, right? And you and I have had so many conversations about this that you can tell me what I'm going to say next, right? Last time we talked, you said, oh, and now you're going to say this. So it's safer when that impulse arises to to say, no, I'm not going to pursue that, right? Because because mania, because obsession, because compulsion. Yeah. This is going to be big. It's good. I'm so glad you're here. So glad you're here. Yeah. Thank you. Who else?
Okay.
Who?
Oh, Dawn.
Okay. Hold on a second, Dawn. Go ahead and unmute yourself, honey.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So the question that comes up for me is, what am I afraid of? And my immediate answer is is failure, but even more complicated than that is succeeding, because once I succeed, then that becomes the new normal. Then I have to go even farther, which is another kind of failure. So that's what was rolling around in my head. So I'm afraid of succeeding and then failing to continue to succeed.
Oh my God. It's like you just punched me in the gut. That hit me. So, no, it's good. I'm like, oh, that's good information. Yeah, that hit me like really, yeah, then I have to keep doing it and doing it.
Exactly. Then I have to keep doing it. That's the new baseline, and that's scary for me.
Yeah. And what also comes to mind in response to that, Dawn, besides my own personal, like, oh my God, this is exactly what I was talking to my own mentor about this morning, but I didn't have the words. So thank you for the words. But the other thing that comes to mind is what you said was, and then I have to keep going and going and going and going and get bigger and more. And that concept right there, that I would check out. That is part of the illness of capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That says always more, bigger, better. We don't stand still. We keep getting more. We keep going further. We keep accumulating more. We keep getting more promotions. You have to be continuously proving your success and then reaching for the next goal. And it's exhausting and all-consuming, right?
Yes.
And here's the thing. That is a cultural rule, and we don't have to play. We can say, you know what? This is enough.
Thank you for saying that.
this is enough. And I'll tell you, I'm just going to sort of, tell you a really sort of personal little thing is, I've spent I'm 53, and I have spent my whole adult life striving to get somewhere, right? And, trying to, run 5 businesses at a time and, while I'm raising kids alone and blah, 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 right? Because the culture said if I just fucking work hard enough that I'll be successful, right? I won't have to worry anymore about money. But then you have to keep right. Then you want the bigger things. You want the better things. You want the more things. One of the things that happened for me when I came back to Massachusetts and I moved into this teeny tiny little place was, first of all, my ego, right? I had to, walk in here and go, I already put money down. I already signed a lease sight unseen. And this place is half the size that I thought, right? It's small, super small. And, I have family who have kitchens bigger than my whole apartment, right? So that's sort of the competition, right, the keeping up with the Joneses. But something about saying, there was an opt-out, right? The landlord could see that I was really struggling with how small the space was. But the space has everything else that I wanted, right? And I thought, I'm just going to do it. right? The landlord would have, in that moment, he said, what do you want? What do you want to do? And I think if I had said, I'm not going to take it, it's just not workable for me, he would have let me out. Because of where it is, he could have rented it that afternoon, right? but there was something about saying yes to getting smaller, right? To not going bigger, not getting better, but saying, this is enough space for two people to live in. We don't need more space than this. And I'll make it adorable, and I have to get rid of all of my giant things that are for big spaces in New England, right? And get little apartment size things for an apartment. But something else happened. Something else happened, and that was I decided I don't want to work that hard anymore to try to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
I have enough work. And if I just do the thing that people actually want, which is teach witchcraft, then I always have enough work because those are the things people sign up for. I can offer a million other fancy schmancy workshops. Nobody signs up. Nobody comes, right? And I feel like a failure. But if I'm just teaching witchcraft, people sign up. I'm busy all the time. I have plenty of students, and I'm successful at it, right? I'm not making $1 million. I'm not making $0.1 million, right? But I have enough. And there was something so radically liberating in saying no more. And I mean like no more. No more chasing. No more striving. No more. And it wasn't a quitting. Wasn't a giving up. But it was. But it was more of like jailbreaking the mindset of capitalism that says go, 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 go. So that's a big, huge aside from passion, but not, right? Because now I'm not spending all of my time striving to attain things that I don't really need. Now right. I can spend time taking pottery lessons and going to dance lessons, and maybe I'll read a book.
Well, now you can be more precise.
Now I can be more precise, right? Like cutting all of those extra arms off of my business was the smartest thing I ever did, and just do the thing. So thank you so much for that. That was huge, Dawn.
Thank you for hearing it and for responding mm-hmm. with, okay, that's good, that's fine.
Good, good. Who's next?
Carrie.
Okay, Carrie. Hold on a minute. I think it's *6 on your phone, hon. There you
Hi.
Go. Hi.
Can you hear me? Hi.
Yep.
I was thinking about what you were saying about the opposite of passion is logic and reason. So in the light of that, would a synonym for apathy be depression? I mean, is depression the sort of the repression of passion?
That's a tricky one for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe perception, I believe that depression is a chemical imbalance, right? Mm-hmm. And so some people can have a temporary chemical response to something and mm-hmm. get a little depressed and then get over it. And then some people can't get their chemistry right. So I think that my perception of depression is as a physiological disease.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I just, when Stephanie was talking, nodded my head and, you know, said yes to about her comment about mania, right? Which is also a chemical imbalance, right? But so apathy is a symptom of depression, for sure, right?
Yeah.
The inability to get up. I think that I'm just working this out alongside you, honey. I know that when I experience depression, which I do, I have sort of some kind of cycle. But I don't even have an impulse. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that impulse to get up and do something, it's like the thought crosses my mind and I'm like, nah. which is a different thing than when there's an impulse and you say no. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to put together, like, as a person who has always followed my passion, you know, and turned it into my career and my life, I think I understand, where the problems can come up with that. I definitely also understand where the judgments of other people come up with that, but through my own eyes, through the lens of a person who follows her passion, I see apathy as almost like a depression of passion. Like I look at people that don't follow through and I say, well, where is your passion? Like, why aren't you doing this? Or why aren't you changing whatever it is you want to change? Or why aren't you trying, you know? And when I think about people that I see lacking passion in their lives, or color, let's say color, I think is a better way to describe it. Or they're not happy in their existence or whatever, I often say to myself that depression seems like a mask for, or some kind of almost like passion being covered up in saran wrap or something. You know what I mean? But they're not touching that fire that's burning, that's there, that's accessible, that gets us going, that makes us make changes and motivates us. I have people very close to me who suffer a lot from it, and I wonder a lot about that, like, you know, have they lost touch with their passion, you know, whether it's chemically induced or not.
Right.
You can't separate all the time the chemical from the spiritual, right? Because
right. Well, you know, passion is the venue of fetch, and fetch runs our autonomic system, so that's, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Yep, I think you're onto something there. It's different language than I use, probably because I'm aware of, you know, sort of people who suffer from mental illnesses don't want to be made examples of. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that when we say, you know, Stephanie made the line from like compulsion, obsession to mania. And I think that, yes, we can also draw a line from apathy and disinterest to depression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So yeah. I think that they are all along, like, yes, if you drew a line and you said, here is passion on the iron pentacle, right? I'm actually drawing this because I have to. and, you know, one side of that is a negative pentacle, right? You know, there's actually, I'm not teaching about those, so I don't want to even really get into it, but the one that slows us down, right, is lead, right? Victor talked about the lead pentacle, and that had things like, I now have to like look at the points again. Power. I'm drawing a blank because these aren't things that I want in my life. But there is a lead pentacle that is sort of the slow, depressed, if you will, version, right? Like we can check, am I in passion or am I in apathy? Am I in passion or am I in obsession? And am I in healthy pride or am I in grandiosity, right? Am I in healthy pride, or am I in a state of false humility or shame, right?
Yeah.
So there are two negative edges that run along this knife's edge of passion, but with all the points. Yep.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Is that it?
Yes.
Thank you, Carrie.
I have something. It's Norby.
Hi, Norby.
Hi.
Go. Hi.
I have my chart of the shadow of the iron shadows. If you want them, I don't have to think about it. I just had the book handy.
You have it handy?
Yeah.
Go, say it.
The ones that I have excess, it's running too hot, where sex becomes corruption, self becomes inflation, passion becomes obsession, pride becomes arrogance, and power becomes tyranny. And then I have a deflated one where sex becomes denial, self becomes depression, passion becomes apathy, pride becomes shame, and power becomes fear. Are the ones that
we're It's interesting. Some of those match what I have, and some of them do not. Yep. So excess in on the hot side, right? On the gilded, what Victor called the gilded pentacle, which is like false gold, right? Sex was lust, like negative lust, right? Like not like this lust of the starry goddess, right? And then yeah, I'm going to have to pull out my notes. I have them. I just don't have them in my head right now. So, but could you, on the forum someplace, could you share that with folks?
Yeah, I've received it a couple different ways, and that's just the one that I had close by.
Yeah.
And I figured since that was the one close by, it was the right one to reach for right now.
Yeah, I have an index card somewhere with five different columns on it. And I suspect when I try to file all my papers tomorrow that are everywhere that I will not cross it. I'm like teaching all these classes and my papers are not getting filed, so my desk is like someone threw up all of the fairy notes all over it. Yeah, it's a disaster. So, what else you got? Was that it?
No, the other thing I wanted to share, and I'm a little bit hesitant to, but whatever. So the people who I have interacted with on this call before, I think I'm the only millennial. And I point that out because I think the messages that I receive around passion, like when I was doing my journaling and listening to folks talk, are very, very different around expectations that you have one, right? And expectations around avocation and expectations around giving everything up to follow said passion, which then is really hard when you're somebody who doesn't have a net, right? And so then not being able to follow your passion becomes a point of stigma.
Right.
And I think that I just think that's a different edge of all of this. And I know that, I teach poetry, right? And I have a number of students right now, all of whom are, young Mormon men, who I'm like, well, what do you love? What are you passionate about? And they either don't have an answer besides God, or they feel a tremendous, which is, yeah, I made that face too, Karina. Or they feel a tremendous amount of shame around not having that. And so I am noticing that, that's something that I feel echoed at my life, and I'm also seeing it echoed on my students' life. And they're about, they're all, 15 years younger than me, but we're all still somehow millennials.
Well, generations are 30 years long. That's why.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw that out, that I think that the cultural expectations around passion for people, like, why aren't you passionate about changing the world? Like, I have to hear my students echoing back to me all the time that they're asked that. And that was definitely messaging that I received when I was their age and still receive. So yeah, it almost seems like it's a cultural, in my life it feels like it's a cultural onus in a way that I didn't feel, I didn't really hear echoed.
Yeah, I think we've been marketed to for many years, you know, by very smart multi-level marketers who tell us to follow our passion. Find your passion, follow your passion, right? This is the reason why I cringe with the Star Goddess prayer that says, what is my work?
Mm.
Right? Because what I had for years was people saying, I don't know what my work is. I don't know what my work is. I don't know. And what they were saying was, I don't know what my passion is. What they were saying was, I don't know what I'm supposed to do in my life. And supposed to do in my life means what am I passionate enough that I want to spend my life doing it for a job? And fairy is not career counseling. And passion is not, it may have something to do with what you do for a living, but it may not. I know plenty of people who are like, I go to work every day at a job I could give a shit about because it pays the bills so I can go live my passions on the weekend. I like to jump out of planes, or I like to ski, or I'm passionate about, you know, I play in a band, and I have no illusions that those things are going to earn me money. And I'm afraid that if I were earning money, I wouldn't be passionate about these things anymore, right? So, but we've been marketed to and marketed to and marketed to, especially since the 90s. Find your passion. Live your passion. What's your passion? And it means work, right? It means if you love something, that's what you're supposed to do for money. And there's nothing wrong with doing what you love for money. And I do what I love for money. Carrie does what she loves for money, right? But I do it because anything else I try to do doesn't work. Like, the gods have a hand in this as well, where they're like, get back over there and do your job, you know? So I'm like, okay. But we really do have a thing about being our passion, and finding your passion has been a big sort of new age spiritual, especially white women of a certain age, and white men too. You know, Tony Robbins and that whole nonsense, right? it is all about that as well. Like, find your passion. Live your passion, figure out how to earn money from your passion. Yeah. So it's huge. Huge, huge. I'm so sorry that your students can't think of anything that they're passionate about.
Yeah, me too. But I'm not done with them yet.
I'm so glad that they are with you.
I think they're a little freaked out by me, but, you know, they haven't dropped.
It's good. It's good to have someone come in and shake up your worldview. Good stuff. Thank you, Norby. So, Brendan, you got anything?
Yeah, I've had a bunch of different things I was thinking about with this, but one of the things I think about in terms of what blockages there are with getting in touch with your passion, I think are that's kind of a cliche, but the idea of the fear of success, which people equate with a lot of different things. I think it comes up a lot when people talk about the idea of prosperity as well. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, the idea of what's going to happen if I actually am able to manifest this. And the other part is of finding your passion, because as you said, you get mixed messages all the time, you know, and the idea that society has for us is that you have to be a successful participant in the consumer culture and make a lot of money in order to be successful. And there's also the responsibilities that you have to pay the bills, you know, to put food on the table if you're a parent, you know, be able to provide shelter and everything else for your children. All of that stuff can definitely get in the way, and it fills up your time, so you don't necessarily always have the space, headspace and clarity or peace to be able to contemplate and kind of truly get in touch with your passion. I think sometimes passion creeps up on us, takes us by surprise when we're struck by something, like maybe something of great beauty, an object or a person or an event. That's when we feel it in our heart. To me, passion, when I think about where it is in the body, it feels like it starts in the solar plexus and lower area and moves up into the heart.
Yeah.
And the negative side of it, I've been on the receiving end of that, you know, with someone who was obsessive compulsive, and I've seen how insane that can be too. You know, quite dangerous actually, when someone is so unhinged by their emotions and their, I mean, passion is more than just emotions, but it definitely finds an outlet through them. But I was kind of like laughing before, though, because that whole, you know, cliche about follow your bliss, people love to throw that phrase around, but I don't think a lot of people really understood what Joseph Campbell really meant by that. He was talking about something a lot deeper, but he was also talking about the mundane, because he tells people to try to be heroes of their own lives. So, you know, you could just be going to work every day, you know, doing your thing, and yet you are a hero in a way, and maybe you are fulfilling your role in the universe by doing all that stuff. It might be that that's all there is for you, and that's not a bad thing in and of itself, but we get, you know, bombarded with these ideas that we have to do these great great things that affect huge numbers of people, and you know, it might just be that, you know, the little small acts that we perform on a day-to-day basis are enough.
Yep. Thank you so much, Brendan. I feel like you just wrapped up the class for me. Thank you. The piece about I'd like us to explore sort of this idea about passion as work, right? As our career path, as our work, as connected to success, as connected to the consumer culture. I'm asking us to explore that because I think it's an interesting and worthwhile exploration. But I also want us to come back to what does passion really mean, right? If passion lives in the body, if passion lives in the fetch, if passion is the impulse to do something, right? Or to connect somehow, or let's try to this week when we do word web weaving, come up with a definition of passion that is based, sort of pull all of that back, and pull it back to here and now. Like, what does passion mean to me? And what happens when I experience passion. Okay? Do I follow through? Do I not follow through? Follow through has more to do with will, and in the magical realm has more to do with will than it does with passion. And it also, in the mundane world, it has to also do with resources and support. So there's that. I think that's everything I have for you guys. Pretty much everything that you heard me say tonight, I was reading from notes or outlines. So pretty much everything will be in the forum. What I'd like us to be doing is look at those five questions, start doing kala on the stuff that came up that's like, ew, I didn't know I felt like that, or I don't like how that feels, right? I don't want to feel that way about that, or I don't. Word web weaving. Think about Victor Anderson's Passion Without Precision is Chaos. And take a look at those 10, if I listen to passion, I would. And that is a good place to sort of get in touch with that sense of when we listen to, when passion comes in and we don't listen, what does that feel like? Just like I asked us to pay attention to, what does that feel like in the body when passion comes up for us, right? That sort of lift is how it feels in my body. And then what does it feel like when we go, oh, no, I'll do that later, or I have more important things to do, or right after I do all of the other 10,000 things on my list, I'll feed my passion, right? All the assignments will be in the forum. The recording will be in the forum by around this time tomorrow night, okay? Thanks, everybody, for being here. I really, 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 really appreciate it. I think this is a great group of people, and I look forward to seeing what we can get accomplished in the next weeks. Any last burning desires? Anything you're so passionate about you have to say it right now? I guess not. Okay. Bye, all.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you.